Well, good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6, Sierra United, November, and this is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8, Zulu Golf Lima. And all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at www.scarsvoip.com. Your net control this evening is quite numerous, so I won't name them all. My name is Kathleen. My call is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. My location is Port St. Lucie, Florida, where it's currently a temperature of about 79. I believe we reached a high of about 82, but a very, very beautiful day. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, I ask you to come aboard. All right, super. No emergency traffic. That's always a great thing. So how about anyone celebrating a birthday this week, or maybe last week, or this upcoming week that would like to come aboard so we can say happy, happy birthday?
Six Victor.
Six Victor, I was actually going to say something, but I know what you're going to say, so go right ahead.
Well, you know, turnabout is fair play, lady. You do it to me at least once a year, and now I'm going to do it to you. Guys and gals, it's Kathy's birthday on Sunday the 19th. So there, defend yourself, m'lady. KY6V, back to you.
Well, Mr. KY6V, all I can say is I am reaching a milestone that I haven't been at before. I feel no different. Probably won't feel any different. I'm still dealing with all those wonderful children. I laugh with that. But thanks for the birthday wishes. Appreciate it. And to me, it's like you always say, it's just another day. So with that, this is actually a very special evening. This is the TIN Open Forum, or it's called the Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or we say TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. But I do want to advise everyone out there that's been connected tonight that the net is being recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. So if you talk this evening, if you've been part of this session, you most definitely will be part of that recording. And our program this evening is about ham jargon. And we have quite a, I guess, not guest speakers, but NCSs that will be there to take over. But the very first one I'm going to throw it to is actually KY6V. And everyone have a great deal of fun. I have some schoolwork to do, but I'll be in the background listening. So KY6V, the floor is all yours, and have some fun tonight.
Well, thank you, pretty lady. Birthday lady. Appreciate that, Kathy. Hi, everybody. Gordon here, KY6V, South Florida. And if you look in the text box, Kathy, there's a great big happy birthday from Gary up there in Syracuse, and it's all in capital letters. Isn't that great? Our subject this evening, guys and gals, is a discussion on the meaning and use of some of the popular ham terms referred to as ham jargon. Some of these terms date back to the start of the hobby. Many involved through the years as our hobby grew and new techniques and modes of operation started to appear. We think this will be a fun program, as the old timers will most likely enjoy hearing some of the older sayings, and the new hams amongst us should also enjoy learning about some of these terms. So the program will be very simple in nature. The moderators will pick up a saying, ask the audience if there is anyone who would like to explain that meaning. Then we'll compare that to the answers that we have on our program material, and then move on to another word or phrase. So the way we're going to start this out is Gary KC2GA is going to take the first segment of questions. He's in Syracuse, New York. Also our assistant net manager, so everybody stand at attention. When he gets up here, and we'll play some kind of fancy music for you, Gary. Good evening, sir, and thanks for being with us. KY6V to KC2GA.
Well, good evening, right back at you. And I look like I'm a little low here on the meter. Am I coming through okay?
Yeah, I reached down to that amplifier you got. Turn the audio up a little bit. You're low on audio, but you're readable. Over.
This should be okay. Or certainly a little better. How's that?
It's doable. You could punch it a little more, but go for it, Gary, and thank you.
Stand by one more time. We want the full Monty here. Hold on. There, this should be okay. Are we coming through nicely now?
Yeah, and you didn't even break the bank. Doing good, sir. Thank you, Gary, KY6V.
How about that? Thank you, Gordon. And hello, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here tonight, that's for sure. Where we are in sunny Syracuse, where everything's floating by the window right now, and it's about somewhere in the lower 50s anyway, and that's about as good as we're going to get for a few days. A couple of days away from graduation. I'll be graduating SUNY Oswego in 2 days, so we're kind of psyched about that. And we've got ourselves a really good TIN tonight. I know that one of the cool things about ham radio is that we have our own little language, just like any other specialty. And for some of the old-timers, it's just fun to kick around. We've come to accept it as just part of what you do. So for the new folks, are probably going, what are they talking about? I never understood what they meant by that. I'm going to buy a nickel for just a second, and I'll come back and tell you more. So we have some phrases. We have some terms that that you may have heard some of the more experienced hands kick around. And you may be wondering where the heck these came from. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw out a term. And then I'm going to have it opened up to the listeners and see if they might know the origin of that term or the meaning of that term. And then we'll see how well that compares to the official explanation that I have here, okay? So that's how we're going to work it. I'm going to take a few questions, and then we'll turn that over to KB9EWG, over to Dave, and we'll have him pick that up. But right now, our first term that we're going to explore is the slashed zero. All right, we've all seen that zero with the slash from it, going through it. So do you know where that came from, or do you know what its purpose is? I throw this out to the listening public right now.
Echo Whiskey Golf.
Echo Whiskey Golf. Hello there, and take a stab at it, Dave.
Well, good evening to you there, Gary, and everybody else on South Cars. Of course, the slash zero is used to distinguish between a zero and a O, especially in with call sign usage and everything else. I'm reading the notes here on what's the description of the slash zero, and I see that there's a note on how to make a slash zero. But I actually have a slash zero font loaded on my computers. So when I'm logging and everything else, you know, if I hit a zero, it automatically slashes out anyways. You do have a slash zero font that I use. And one thing I'm really surprised about is Echolink was designed, you know, for amateur radio use, and I'm surprised they didn't incorporate a slash zero with Echolink. KC2GA from KB9EWG.
Well, it is kind of interesting, huh? You kind of think they would do that. But, you know, some of the most obvious stuff always gets forgotten, too. So, you know, I guess you got to take it with a grain of salt. There is a way to do that on your keyboard in Windows, and there's also a way to do it with a Mac. I know with a Mac, it's a combination of Command and Zero or Control, Command and Zero. I did it a long time ago. I honestly can't remember what it is, but if you look it up, you can find it. It's just a bunch of keyboard shortcuts that'll get you there. For Windows, you can produce this by holding Alt down and then 0216 on your keyboard. Okay, you have to use the numeric keypad, not the numbers across the top row of the keyboard. This should work in most PC-based editors, such as email clients, word processors, etc. So if that is what you need to do, if you want to get that slash zero, use your keypad, and it's Alt 0216.
It works.
And Steph just tried it, and it works. We'll buy a nickel and be right back. So it's been kid-tested, mother-approved. Let's see. Our next item, what does this mean? Or where, then you could probably hear Mr. Jingles back there. Your next item that you can maybe tell us about where it comes from or what it means is 7.3. I'll tell you right now, 7.3 is the proper way to say that. I will stand by that. There are many opinions on that. Some people think 73 is just fine. I was always brought up to recognize that as 7.3, and I'm sticking by tradition. So what does it mean? Where did it come from? Do you know? Let's hear from you right now as we continue on the TIN on South Cars.
Six, Victor.
Six, Victor is recognized. Hello there, sir.
Yeah, the only thing I can say on your current question is don't make it plural, guys. That's the English teachers get upset. It's not 73, it's 7.3. I want to take you back for a moment on your last question about the zero. Let me buy a nickel. Oddly enough, earlier today I was thinking about this particular question on the slash zero because I knew it was coming up tonight. And my thought process started, you know, I wonder why this happened. I don't remember this happening in the early days at all, that there was any confusion between an O and a zero. And then the more I thought about it, Gary and gang, is that in those days gone by, if you were on voice, you were automatically triggered between the difference of O and zero because the person would give you their call sign as an example and say zero. They wouldn't say O if it was a zero. And if you were on CW, you either got five dashes or you got three dashes between the O and A. So it was all cut and dry. And then came the computer, and then came the digital age, and all of these digital programs that we have that at our disposal now, most of which are run off of your keyboard. Let me buy a nickel here. And there's no slant zero on your keyboard unless you go through the gymnastics that Gary and David have just mentioned. It's alike, Gary, to comparing a zero and an O to a capitalized I and a lowercase L on the keyboard. If you can tell the difference between those two, you're a better man than I am. Back to you, Gary, KY6V.
Very well put, sir. But that's true, you know. We never really concerned ourselves too much with that until we got into the digital stuff. And that became rather important at that point, you know. It is funny because you do kind of have to jump through hoops. I know David has a font loaded, but if you want to do it, you know, with the ASCII equivalent, you kind of have to do a little tricky thing. And I'm going to look up the Mac equivalent, whatever that keyboard shortcut is. I only had to do it once, but it's some combination of keys. To get it. It's like, because that reminded me, I just finished up this semester taking Spanish 2, and I did pretty well in it, which was a miracle. But we had to do a lot of writing in it, and it was great to have that. The Spanish characters are built right into the Mac OS, so you just hold the key where you need it. A little longer and it pops up. Let me buy a nickel. But that was very handy. That worked out well for me. That was good. But that kind of reminded me of that. But just as Gordon has said, we don't use 7-3 in plural. Okay, that's tacky, gentlemen and ladies. No. 7-3, if you must, 73, but 7-3 is proper, and it means best regards. That's universal. I think that's obviously the universal hand greeting. You get done with a QSO at 7-3, see you soon, blah blah blah. But please do us old timers a favor. And don't use it in plural. Okay, we're going to move along now. 807. You've seen those probably, and you've heard people talk about 807. My question to you is, what the heck is it? So we're going to open that up to response right now as the tin continues here on South Coast.
Echo Whiskey Golf.
Echo Whiskey Golf, what do you got there?
Well, I do have some more to comment on as far as the 7-3 goes, but of course the 807 would be a vacuum tube it's referring to. But I do have more to comment on with the 7-3 section there.
Well, David, you're right on the vacuum tube. It is a big mother, several inches tall, and several inches around. It's also slang for a beer, which I never knew. I had never known that before, but it's there's nothing like a cold 807 on a hot Arizona afternoon. That's according to our friends in Iceland. A pint of Guinness is also known as a black 807. So I have never heard of it used in conjunction with refreshment, but certainly it's a well known and very important vacuum tube for those folks that may not be familiar with it. It's a big guy. It is. So you have some stuff on 7-3. Let's hear what you have there.
Well, what I've got goes back to when I first got licensed. I was actually taking a class for my novice license, and the instructor in our class, stressed, as you said, it is set as a 7-3, not 73, 73rds. It's 7, and it's a 7 and a 3 sent as separate characters. It actually dates back further than amateur radio. It goes back to the old wire telegraphy days. And it was actually when one operator, and they actually did have call signs in the telegraphy even, When one operator was ending his shift and the next operator was coming on, they would signal a 7-3 to signify the end of their shift. that is originally where the term came from, is from telegraphy, meaning the end of the shift there. That's why it's always used at the end of a conversation. It's now being used as best regards, but it originally was end of shift. Back to you there, Gary, KB9EWG.
Six Victor, also.
Six Victor, come on in there.
Yeah, thank you. You know, Dave is raising some good points here. And I would like to say, if I can, that, you know, this is a best wishes. It should be used as towards the end of your contact, the end of your QSO, as a bon voyage, you know, happy days, whatever. I have heard, in fact, very recently, some people using that term in the middle of a contact. They take a transmission and they'd say 73s. Meaning well, but everybody else on the other end of the pipe was saying, does that mean that was his last transmission? Let me buy a nickel here. I don't want to capitalize things, Gary, but you can take the 807 changing horses here to, don't forget, an 813 now. You talk about 807 being a big guy. That was a 25 to a 50-watt final amplifier tube primarily. I think its maximum was 60 watts. But then you have the 813s that came down the line, and that was a 250-plus watt output a bottle, and they call the 813s the heavy liquor. You know, that's the scotch department, the bourbon department, the rum department, and you name it. So, lots out there to have fun with. KY6V, go ahead, Gary.
Leg 813s were known as corn squeezins, too. But, yeah, those were some big old guys. They really were. In today's world of SDRs and what have you, digital transceivers and all that good stuff, kind of miss those things. But there's still plenty of them out there. It's kind of neat to see them. See people, you know, talk about it. Well, boat anchors. I'm a big boat anchor fan. So, and a big AM fan. But it's cool to know about those things. It's cool to know about the traditions, and that extends back to equipment too, in this hobby. We're talking about ham jargon tonight. Some of the terms that you may have heard or seen along the way, maybe you were wondering about. And our next term is another set of numbers, another pair of numbers, and that's 88. What does 88 mean? Do you know? We'll test your knowledge right now as we continue on the TIN here on South Cars.
70.
Hello there, sir. Have you an answer for me?
Oh, yeah, you know me. I have an answer and a quick story, both. Oh, and by the way, about the 0 and the O, well, N-O-7-O. May I point out that every United States ham radio call only has one number in it. So it's that's another difference between the 0 and the O. Okay, well, the number 88 or 88 means hugs and kisses, or hugs and or kisses. And it has frequently been used, especially earlier on, in a day of less political sensitivity, maybe the way to say it, when as a cordial and very polite salutation from an OM, or old man, to a YL or XYL, meaning a young lady or a married young lady. Now, so it was frequently common to hear 888 between two licensed hams, where one happened to be where the people were different genetic persuasions. Now, That said, let me reset here. I personally can attest to an appreciation of that 8-8 because it's nice to have it as a salutation for dear friends that we happen to know who are both licensed, you know, whereas an exchange between an OEM and a YL. But it's even more meaningful when you're sending an 88 to a licensed YL who you also happen to be actually married to. Now, that's also a good 88. KC2GA on the South Coast TIN, NF70.
I'm still going to get this this XYL of mine a license of some sort. Well, she has a license of some sort, but I'm going to get her an FCC license of some sort. Now that I'm out of school, I'll have more time to browbeat her. So, well, that's true. But did you know you can get very tricky with 88 too? For instance, if you send the left 8, that's a hug. If you send the right 8, that's a kiss. And when you send 88, that's hugs and kisses. Okay. Skill. We have one more term in this segment anyway, and it's an antenna party. Okay, so what is an antenna party? I mean, like, do you put antennae on your head and meet your friends or what? So do you know what an antenna party is? If you do, let's hear from you as the 10 continues on South Coast.
Echo Whiskey Golf.
Echo Whiskey Gulf, we have you once more, sir. And what is the deal on the antenna party?
Well, quick comment on the 88 part there. Would that be like left and right Twix? The left Twix and the right Twix, you know? Anyways, as far as the antenna party goes, well, that's where you get a bunch of hams together, put up your antenna, and then you probably have a pizza and adult beverages served along with that there to kind of bribe the mass and celebrate the accomplishments of getting the antenna up there. Back to you there, Gary, KB90WG.
That is exactly right. Perfectly well-defined. And as a side note, we're going to have a KC2GA antenna party sometime this summer because I've got a whole bunch of stuff to straighten out here. And I think we got a couple of local volunteers that will gladly show. if there's enough malt consumables and pizza around, I think they'll do it. That's exactly what it is, though. So a good thing to know, and also good for folks that, once again, maybe new to the hobby, to understand that there is a sense of community in this hobby, and it's generally enhanced when you have pizza and beer involved. So it comes in really handy when you're putting up antennas. With that being said, we turn it over to David, KB9EWG, for the next set of questions.
Well, I thank you there, Gary. Good evening, everybody. KB9EWG, David in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Echo 2289 is my South Car's number. And we're continuing on with the TIN. The next term of jargon we are talking about is barefoot. Now, are we referring to a rugrat running around your living room with no shoes on, or what are we referring to here? I'll turn it to the audience and see who might have a comment on that. This is KB9EWG.
KC2GA.
KC2GA, it's your turn.
I believe that has to do with amateur radio operators in the Ozarks and the footwear that they apply.
Well, that could apply there too, but and you also got the rugrats running around the living room with no shoes on as well there. But the term barefoot, anybody else want to comment on that before I move on here?
LXD.
LXD, go ahead, it's your turn.
This is WA3LXD. Everybody on the net tonight. I believe barefoot is going to refer to operating your transmitter without your linear amplifier. You turn off your linear amplifier and you use your transmitter or the exciter connected straight to the antenna. At least that's, I think, how my memory goes on that. KB90WG, WA3LXD.
Well, thank you, Dave, and you're absolutely correct there. Barefoot does refer to running audio transmitter without an amplifier. In other words, the power out is being produced entirely by the transmitter without any assistance from an amplifier. So that is correct. Very good there, Dave. This is KB9EWG, David in La Crosse, Wisconsin here with the TIN. The next term we're going to look at is birdie. Now, is that some bird sitting on your antenna there? So let's talk about the term birdie. Who wants to comment on that one? KB9EWG.
Six Vector.
Well, hello there, Gordon. Go ahead there.
Yeah, I thought I'd jump in there with a silence at the moment. You know, you don't want birdies in your belfry. It's an unwanted signal that you've got in your receiver, and it can be derived from a whole bunch of things. There's a whole bunch of possibilities that you have to run down one at a time to find out what's doing it to you. But it's a fundamental RF signal that is also detected on your receiver in the harmonic relationships of that particular fundamental frequency. Now, I'll give you a case in point. One of the earlier problems that the hams started to run into was the 3.57 color burst subcarrier in your television set. All of a sudden, they found out that every 3.57 KC they moved up the band, they had another thing going at them. And it come from other sources, too. It can be annoying. Let me give you one more example. Let me buy a nickel. Everybody that's familiar with the cable television business and the fact that the signals come in on your coax, you know, from the cable company, you have to realize that each of the various channels that they supply to you are on different frequencies. So, if that cable is leaking, has a bad connection, and some of the RF is getting out into the airways, you're going to start picking it up on your receiver. And I don't remember exactly what the frequency relationship was, but there was one channel that fell right in the middle of the 2-meter band. It was something like around 146 megacycles. And, you know, when you're listening to TV on a single sideband receiver, it gets your attention. Any rate, it's something you don't want, and what you have to do is just start trying to find out where it's coming from. Start turning things off, disconnecting things, and you'll find it. KY6V, go ahead, David.
Yeah, very good there, Gordon, and yep, I can relate. In other words, reverse TBI. Boy, I remember back in the days before digital TV and all that, how much of an issue TBI could be. Well, you know, that's something that's kind of gone by the wayside since we've gone digital there. So, but yeah, I've had birdies myself there, and it can be a pain. Well, thank you, Gordon. Anybody else have any comments before I move on to the next topic on this discussion here?
WA3LXD.
WA3LXD, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment for a moment on a birdie. My recollection kind of had it very close to what Gordon was saying, but I seem to remember that being something that would be generated locally inside your receiver itself. Sometimes your IF amplifier would start oscillating, and that would create, obviously, havoc, since amplifiers aren't supposed to be oscillators. Or something else would be going on actually inside the receiver itself. that would actually be generating the birdie. But I'm not positive on that, but that's my recollection, UWA3LXD.
Yeah, I've heard of such a thing myself there, and I know that sometimes even just on police scanners you get birdies on different channels and that there. But thanks for the comment there, and appreciate it. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next topic of discussion. We're going to talk boat anchors this time, and we're not talking a barnacle-covered piece of iron used to keep your dinghy in place there. So what about the term boat anchor? Let's discuss boat anchors here. This is KB9EWG.
KC2GA.
Kind of figured we'd be hearing from you on this one there, Gary. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's one of my favorite things are boat anchors. And those are large, heavy, usually old radios that are generally restored. But the old stuff has a certain charm that I really love. So they are affectionately known as boat anchors. And I've got a boat anchor that's going to be a summer project, as a matter of fact, around here. Pardon me. I have an old Heath Kit fixer, which I'll be working on this summer. So that should be a lot of fun. Hopefully we'll have it up and running before the snow flies anyway. But yeah, they're classics. They're great stuff to fool around with, and a joy to operate. Boat anchors. KG2GA, back to the net.
Six, Victor.
Sounds like you're going to be playing on some 6-meter AM. Sounds like fun there, Gary. And Gordon, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, if anybody wants to see a row of boat anchors, come on by. I've got a garage full of them. You know, I'm in my 70th year of hamming. And I'll tell you what, I've got some boat anchors. And I mean, they date back just after Marconi. Go ahead, David, over.
Well, I currently don't own any boat anchors, but I still love them. I might be picking up an FT-101 EE, I believe it is, that my friend's got. He's talking, possibly getting from him. But, yeah, I currently don't have any boat anchors, but doesn't mean I don't like them. My first CW contact was on an HW-101, so I do have a love for boat anchors myself here. Anybody else want to comment on boat anchors before we move on to the next topic? Okay, hearing none. Now the next term we are looking at in the ham jargon would be brass pounder. Now, is that somebody going out with a big sledgehammer pounding on a piece of brass, or what's up there? This is KB9EWG. Who wants to talk about brass pounders?
Well, I guess I can't let this one go by. Six, Victor, David.
Okay, Gordon, go ahead and pick it up.
Yeah, you know, I've always been a very strong and interested CW operator. So a brass pounder is a guy or gal that normally is using a straight key, an ascent CW, by, you know, pounding the pedal up and down in dits and dashes. It's a loving term, and I'll tell you what, I don't think it's in your lineup of questions to ask, but you could probably add this one along with the brass pounder. What is the Q signal QLF? And I'll answer it so somebody doesn't try to research it, because you're going to find it hard to look up on the internet. But the Q signal QLF basically sends, are you sending by your left foot? A left-footed brass pounder. Go ahead, David, from KY6V.
And actually, Gordon, I've heard that referred to as quick left foot, or QLF, quick left foot. So, sounds great. Okay. We'll move on to the next subject in this discussion here. How about bug? We're not referring to insects in your shack either. How about the term bug? If you want to talk about the term bug, this is KB9EWG.
KC2GA.
Ah, Gary, go ahead and don't tell me. You got yourself a Vibroplex, right? KB9EWG.
Yeah, right. Well, it's nothing you need to call Orkin about. I know that. A bug is a mechanical keying device for transmitting code. It is a semi-automatic means of sending code. I'm Mr. 5 words per minute, okay, and that's a good day, okay. For those who are like our illustrious KY6V that can send probably 12 times as fast as that, you know, a Vibroplex, or which is a type of a bug, would probably be quite a necessary item. Since I don't play in that league, I'll never see one. But for those of you who are proficient, and God love you, in the code, it's a great tool, and I wish I was up there with you, but that was never in the cards for me. Back to the net, it's KC2GA.
Well, you know, Gary, I have used iambic paddles myself, and I've sent with iambic. I have tried using a bug, especially a Vibroplex, and I just couldn't get the fist down. Just could not get the rhythm. You know, the idea of the manual and the manual dits and the manual dits and automatic dies, or manual dits, whatever the order is there. You know, I like the idea of the dits on one and the dies on the other and back and forth. I just couldn't get the rhythm trying to play with the bug there. I mean, one of these days I might actually, if I get a hold of one, I might sit down and actually try to get better at it, but last time I tried to use one, it was a disaster. Well, I think we're coming up to about the halftime show. We got a halftime special this evening. We're going to have George, NL70, and David, GW8SZL, for our halftime special. So I'm going to turn it over to GW8SZL. David, are you there to start things off on the halftime special? This is KB9EWG.
Yes, I most certainly am, and thank you very much indeed. With May 2019, TIN Lizard Energy Calculation. On this TIN, we are taking a break from the harder technical topics covered recently and covering ham jargon. We are enjoying our fun and camaraderie as fellow radio enthusiasts and South Cars members. Learning about old and new ham jargon takes some significant research effort. To show how significant the South Cars research efforts are for the TIN and South Cars server operations, maintenance and upkeep, we should take a quick look at the virtual South Cars campus in Port St. Lucie, Florida. On the AM connection, we have heard about the virtual coffee beans that are sent to keep our operators alert during the nets when they brew their virtual coffee. On the rapture, we have learned about the virtual living room housed under the main house where Gordon, KY6V, lives, under his Radio Shack room, and contains gold trim teacups and leather chairs and mahogany serving island. As we have heard about the South Cast picnic ground between KY6V's and K6SUN patio, and the canal in back, as well as the virtual tennis and racquetball courts. There are even real live ducks that have planning and logistics meetings, with mum addressing the flight plans for the day with their ducklings. Just next to the main operating position is a real, not virtual, sliding glass door, and concrete patio with overhead cover and support beams. There is also a glass table on the patio, just under the overhang, as one walks out the sliding glass patio door. Now I'm going to pass it over to Declan, Mike Whiskey 6, Sierra Zulu Lima.
With such a functional and hard-working South Cars headquarters, South Cars also has an extensive research program. Each of our TINs uses research and provides an extremely well-done presentation of technical topics about our hobby. electronics, licensed study classes, digital modes, modern operating skills, and mathematics are all part of research performed for our information nets. Sometimes that research also yields surprising results. Here is one light-hearted example of surprising research performed for our South Cars headquarters and virtual campuses and buildings is one of our net control stations and board members, George NO70. George, over to you. NO70 from Mike Whiskey 6, Sierra Zulu, Lima.
Well, thank you, Dave and Declan. It is surely good to have European Statistical Field Office present today to help us look at some of the calculations that go on and the research efforts. There is a lot of effort and work that is put in behind the scenes by our South Cars management team, KY6V, K6SUN, KC2GA, and others, and the board members. That a lot of work that goes in that is not seen or recognized. So this halftime special is a lighthearted look at our hobby and said with much love and appreciation for the work that they do. Let me reset. So that being said, I am very pleased that we do have with Dave and Declan our European Statistical Field Office that does statistical research also present today to help us look at some calculations about alternative energy solutions to power the South Cars virtual reality campus and all of its virtual reality headquarters, virtual reality outposts, and virtual reality buildings. It is a delightful hallmark of our status as licensed radio operators that we always seek to improve our operational readiness. Therefore, our South Cars South Wales office of the United Kingdom has kindly offered to help present the context of some recent research findings as close to the April Fool's date of April 1st, 2019 as possible on the GIM calendar. So, Dave, will you please present the basic premise of the report tonight that we're filing about the recent research and cost-finding discoveries about alternative energy for the virtual reality South Cars headquarters and the South Cars virtual campuses and buildings. Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima from NO70. Over.
Thank you, George. This is Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. One of the features of being a capable operator is the ability to adapt our knowledge to new engineering problems and mathematical calculations. Now, here is one example of adapting algebra and mathematics to insect removal from the South Cars patio, leading out onto the duck conference area of the South Cars headquarters grounds. NO70, will you please play that audio file for the net?
KY6V here. I was having fun with sitting out on the porch one day watching an ant crawl across the cement floor. And it was really moving on. This is an itty-bitty little ant, not like a great big red ant or something. And this thing was just, you know, in turbocharged mode. So I timed it. And then I calculated the 12 inches that it had traveled into how much turf he could actually travel in a minute, and then an hour, and that kind of stuff. And then I think I sent out an email. I said, you guys know how fast an ant can move? Then shortly after that, and I get raspberries from Chief on this one too, that I have too much time on my hands, which is not really the truth.
And that is the truth. GW8SZL, NO70.
Sorry, George, if you pass it back to me.
Roger. So right below playamps.wave@NO70, I believe it's yours. GW8SZL, NO70. Go ahead.
Right, so now we are learning about the speed of wildlife on the South Cars campus, we can look for other engineering mathematics applications. Another example is alternative energy mathematics calculations. Now, there is a town in Maryland that investigated the use of energy-generating concrete blocks from the footfalls on the downtown sidewalks. This raises the possibility of generating alternative energy for the South Carthay quarters from the native wildlife on the South Carthay back porch. Please listen to the observation by Gordon, KY6V, on the patio that resulted in an energy calculation to help power Florida amateur stations. NO70, will you please play that audio file for the next?
I was sitting out there one day and I was watching this lizard walking across the ceiling of the porch. Let me buy a nickel. And then I started asking myself the question. He was upside down, and he was still holding on to the ceiling. And he was moving along at a pretty good speed, too. Wasn't worried about speed. I wanted to know how the heck he was hanging on. So that went into another study. You know, you get crazy like that the older you get.
Another example of South Carthay's research. For more information, let's turn it back today to W8SZL, NO70.
So now we know about the research being performed right in the background of our very own South Carthay headquarters. NO70 will go over an alternative energy calculation if South Carthay used falling lizards as an energy source. NO70 from GW8SZL.
Well, South Carthay's in the TIN, and David Declan and everyone assembled. It's my pleasure to elaborate. As we all know, our own South Carthay's leadership has been on the forefront of many engineering and website breakthroughs to keep our South Carthay's conference and nets up and running. It is no small task, and Gordon works a lot of hours and everything, so yes, having some fun here. The most recent server turnarounds and security upgrades made necessary almost daily have consumed significant headquarters and leadership time, resources, and energy of Gordon and KB8ZGL and a lot of others, and that includes the need for electrical power energy to power all the workstations and servers. Let me reset. So I have a question for the net here. Can we apply ant speed and lizard fall research calculations to using alternative energy sourcing for the South Carthay's virtual headquarters in the form of gathering energy from falling lizard impact on an energy-generating platform like the one in that town in Maryland? So, fellow South Carthay's members and visitors, let's try a calculation to test the potential. I want to move quickly here. Time's getting going by. So, as we have know, because the power in watts is equal to the energy E in joules divided by the time period T in seconds, based on that scientific observation, we can use the formula for impact velocity of a falling object or lizard from a hyperphysics website based on the principle of V equals square root of the product of 2 times G times H. And I'll put the website hyperlink in the text box before we go. Now, using this website calculator, we deducted the force in joules from a 32-ounce mass falling lizard, which is estimated to have a mass of 0.907185 kilograms, falling from a patio roof height of 8.3 feet to the glass table mentioned earlier, that's 27.5 inches high, leaving a total travel distance of 99.6 inches minus 27.5, or 72.1 inches, which is 1.83134 meters. But this alone does not permit us to calculate the force of impact. Let me continue. Because having made that travel, the falling lizard, once it hits the glass tabletop, bounces back up a little bit in the air after impact, estimated of about 0.1 centimeter bounce. This gives an approximate average impact force of 16,281.36 newtons. Assuming it takes 1 second for the lizard to actually rebound, That means power is equal to 16281.36 per second, or 16.2813 kilowatts, which will result in 16.2813 kilowatts per lizard fall. Mike Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima has more from NO70. Go ahead.
Yes, so obviously one lizard on one porch is not enough for a viable alternative energy source, so we need to apply a multiplication factor of the estimated number of Florida households that can help with the power generation. Assuming 100K households in Florida with an identical patio with overhanging lizards, with one lizard dropping per minute, this is a falling lizard impact rate of 100,000 times 1 over 60 seconds per minute, or 1,666 2/3 lizards per second throughout Florida. Right, passing to you, GWASZL, from Mike Whiskey 6, Sierra Zulu Lima.
Yeah, thank you very much, Declan. Since each lizard per second generates 16.2813 kilowatt hours per lizard second, and we have a Florida-wide lizard fall conversion rate of 1,666.6667 lizards per second, we therefore have a total energy generation of 16.2813 times 1,666.6667 kilowatt hours, for a total energy generation of 27.1355 kilowatt hours, generated by one lizard per minute falling from 100,000 Florida households, with patios onto a glass table statewide. Back to you, George. NO70 from GWASZL.
Well, thank you, Annette. We're going to return back to the dictionary and have terms in just one moment. This final concluding thought, then, in honor of all the statistical research and our prowess as mathematical geniuses being radio ham operators with our licenses. To calculate our energy savings from the alternative lizard energy, let's assume a utility billing rate of 12 cents per kilowatt hour. So we learned earlier that we then can, applying 12 cents per hour, we are generating a savings using alternative falling lizard energy, a savings of $3,256.26 if we just were to use falling lizards as an alternative energy source from 100,000 Florida homes with a patio and glass table equipped similar to KY6B's back porch, with northern curly-tailed lizards in the overhang. Note the NO70 shack is already using alternative energy in the form of wind-generated energy, so since I'm not in Florida, I'm afraid I'm not able to use alternative lizard energy here. These calculations are now submitted for peer review to the South Cars Thursday Information Net, all ham radio operators assembled here, and also for your independent mathematical verification, so that you can make any required adjustments and calculate the possibility of alternative lizard energy for your ham radio location. Back to KY6V for the next part of the TIN and abbreviations. KY6V, NO70. Thank you, and Gordon, thank you for all of your help for us, all of us that are members and visitors of South Cars. KY6V, NO70.
Well, no. You know, thank you, George, and thank you, David, and Declan, for all that information. I'll tell you what, for one, I'm going to have to listen to the podcast several times to make sure that I've got your mathematical calculations understood and further figured out, I guess. And we will be... unless the dam breaks, putting out the podcast sometime tomorrow morning. So it'll be on our website of the entire session here tonight. And George came up with a nice PDF document. covering the formulas that he just gave you guys, and so I'll post that underneath the recording posting for your reference and thoughts and comments, for that matter. Let me buy a nickel here. Okay, we're going to continue on here. We are currently about 7 minutes into the second hour, and we have a host more of ham jargon literature here that we could cover, but we're not going to cover it all tonight. But let me go on with a few more and lighten up the mathematical side of things. Thanks again, George and group. The subject, first on the list that I have here, is what is CTCSS? Sierra Tango, Charlie, Sierra, Sierra. Well, I'm going to tell you what it what the name indicates, and you tell me what it means. It stands for continuous tone-coded squelch six system. What does that mean, and where is it used? Anybody like to tackle that one? KY6V, over.
E8HEP.
And Echo Whiskey Golf.
Okay, I got you, David. Echo Whiskey Golf. Who was the other station coming in on All-Star? One more time, please.
HEP. Hotel Echo Papa.
All right, we got you that time. Hotel Echo Papa. Thank you very much, sir. We're going to take you first. David, please stand by. HEP, go ahead.
CTCS, that is a used in to access a repeater. I guess you could do it from radio to radio also. You would send a subaudible tone that opens up the squelch on a repeater so doesn't get spurious radio signals and opens up the squelch and you hear a bunch of static on the air. So it's very useful, and I was trying to explain that to a youngster this weekend who had had a family radio, service radio, and he was grasping it, I think, and so that's my answer.
Well, you're right on, sir. I know that we've talked before, but it's been a long time. What is the name, please, and your location? Over.
My name is Steve. I live in Gwinn, Michigan, probably 15 miles south of Marquette, which is the queen city of the Upper Peninsula, meaning it's the largest city, and it's also the county seat and beautiful place to live, and we just got rid of our last little snowbank here from the snowplow, and nice day today. It's probably about 60 degrees, and that's where I'm at, and I've spent a long time since I've been on the net here, and sure enjoy it.
Well, isn't that great? Well, thank you, Steve. You're ringing my bells, bringing back the memory. Being up there in the UP, we have family just under the UP in Kalkaska, northern Michigan. So we're somewhat familiar with your turf up there. The wife and I were up there last year. I think it was in July, and we traveled over the Mackinac Bridge and got up to the other end from you of the Upper Peninsula, and goofed around and had fun. So thank you, Steve. Your answer is right on. Let's see what David has to answer or add to that. EWG, please.
And I want to say one thing. I was listening to the all the comments about the calculations, and for some reason I was hearing a certain Henry Mancini song playing in my head when George and Dave and Declan were talking about those calculations and everything there. Just a certain Henry Mancini song was coming to mind at that point in time. Anyways, yeah, CTCSS is also known as PL, which comes from private line with Motorola. Quiet talk, another, you know, there's many different terms utilized to describe CTCSS and many different systems to determine what code tone you need. Like ICOM had their code tones, and Motorola had their list. And so, yes, CTCSS, continuous tone, sub-squelch there, quiet talk, private line, there's many different terms for it there. KY6B from KB90WG.
Very good, David. Well, you're right on also, obviously, both you and Steve. Very useful in a lot of applications, and primarily in repeater operations, guys. You'll find that particular technique utilized quite a bit in repeater-type operations. Okay, let's move on to the next one here, similar to but different than. And that is, what is DTMF? That's Delta Tango Mike Foxtrot. And I'm going to tell you what it stands for, and hopefully you guys can explain to everybody generally what it is and what it's used for. DTMF is dual tone multiple frequencies. Dual tone, multiple frequencies. Comments on this one, please. KY6V, call now.
KC2GA.
7-0 with a question.
Echo Whiskey Golf.
Okay. Well, we got three lined up on this one. Everybody stand by for the heavy rolls. GA70EWG. We're going to start with Mr. Syracuse. You're an old musician. You've been doing dual tones for a long, long time. Gary, go ahead. Over.
You know, when that first came out, I was playing everything on it. That is the sound that you hear on a touch-tone phone, and it is useful for playing lots of tunes. It is also useful for other things. It enables us to control remote devices by the use of those tones. This was developed by the Bell system, by Bell Labs, as a means of operating switching, digital switching, or non-analog switching, and it has become a mainstay of being able to remotely control items. One of the really cool things that you can do, let me just buy a nickel. One of the really cool things that you can do, obviously, is you've probably heard people accessing repeaters and giving it instructions via DTMF. But if you look at how it works, you could just go online and on Google and punch in DTMF matrix, and you can see how the tones work, how they're laid on top of each other, and how they signify each digit and sometimes a number as well. It's really an ingenious means of control communication, and it's one of those classics. You know, it's been around for a while, and I don't think it's going anywhere. Back to the net, this is KC2GA.
Thanks, Gary. You've got me laughing, you know. KY6V here. About your earlier comments, but you're right on everything you said. You know, I'm old enough, guys, that I grew up with a crank telephone first, and then we went to the dial telephone, and then we went to the DMF telephone, the tone telephones, and the first thing I did was try to figure out how to play Mary Has a Little Lamb on on the touchstones. And you know what? You can do it. N070. Go ahead, George. KY6V, over.
KY6V and the South Cars TIN, N070. Well, Gordon, I sure am glad you mentioned the crank to the dial to the DTMF phones, because that's exactly where my question is at. I'm sure a lot of people here may have watched some old-timey movies and seen the private detective, whoever, using a rotary dial telephone and dialing thing, goes, clicking, click, click, click. Now, when they first started introducing the DTMF phones with the push buttons, Gordon, they obviously were having to use the same circuits, the same lines from homes to the office. But if they were using the DTMF instead of the rotary dial, how did they do that? Did they multiplex it? Was there some detector? How did the switching equipment to route the call know what to do when you had, or know which one to use when someone picks it up to dial? I really don't know the answer to the question. KY6V, NS70, go ahead.
Well, that's an interesting question, George, and I don't really know the answer either. I suppose it's researchable. But, I would take some wild guesses that if the sharing the pair, if I can put it that way, between dial-up and DTMF, if the receiving device was hearing a tone, it would process it accordingly, and if it was getting digital pulses, it would, select that path and process it appropriately. But I'm not really sure. I'd have to look. One good question deserves another. Name for me, Mr. Warren. The name of the first DTMF telephone that became so popular. Over.
Oh, that's a good question. That is a really good question. I know you know the answer. I'm going to take a wild guess. Was it the Princess phone? I mean, I know that was a very popular line, and it came in pink also, as well as blue and other colors. But was it the Princess phone, or was it there another name? KY6V, and I don't know the answer to the question, honestly. Thanks. I'm glad you asked me, and I'll say that. Go ahead.
Well, that's my recollection. It was the Princess, I think. The Princess was the low-profile, smaller telephone module. So there may have been a DTMF prior to that. I have out in one of the boxes out here in the garage one of the original dial-up phones, and it works. It'll work on a telephone line today, even though it's really looking for DTMF. It'll work. So the duplicity between the two systems does exist, and exists to this day, for that matter. Okay, thanks, George. EWG, Mr. Wisconsin, go ahead.
Okay, well, basically, Gary touched on a lot of what I was going to say there. Of course, DTMF being the first touch-tone phones were the first real use of DTMF. Of course, you got the matrix, the keys there. 1, 2, 3, each row of numbers, of course, is a different tone. You got the 3 across, you got the 4 up and down, those are all different tones there, and you push one button, you're actually combining the vertical tone and the horizontal tone together. And one thing I used to do is if you push all 3 buttons on a row, you'd cancel out the second tone, and hear what the first tone really is there for that row. But, that was, and of course, the first generation touchtone phones did not have the pound and the asterisk sign on there, or the pound and the at sign, the star. KY6B from KV90WG.
Yeah, then, you know, people like ICOM and Yaesu and Kenwood got in the act, and they put an A, B, C, D on their touch-tone microphones as well as the asterisk. The rest of the tomfoolery. So on goes the saga. Okay, very good, guys. Well, thank you for that. Let's move on. The next category that I have is DX. That's Delta X-ray. What does it mean? I think that's probably familiar to you, a lot of you, but I would ask, along with explaining what it is, what is the criteria? That is to say, what determines a signal that you are talking to be DX as opposed to possibly local? And that's sort of an interesting wrinkle to DX. Anybody want to take that one? KY6V.
Well, Echo Whiskey Golf.
Okay, David, I've got you. I heard a key up and no audio, and I looked up and I just saw a flash go offline. Was that you trying to get in, Gary? Over.
Indeed it was, no?
Oh, boy, I tell you what, you're getting fast on that push to talk. I almost missed you. Go ahead, Gary, and then we'll pick up David. GA, please.
I think I'm working. Hello?
Yeah, you are now. Go ahead.
Yeah, for some reason it just kind of locked up. So I don't know, but I'm just glad it's working. Two quick things. It was, I believe, the Princess in its original form was a rotary phone. And it was, as you recall, a luxury item back in the days of plain black Bakelite, so that was already a high-end phone, and because it was such a high-end phone, it was, you know, unnatural to go to the evolution of DTMF. DX, by definition, I think, is any communication over 600 miles. I think that's the established norm. I'm gonna stick to that, but I may be shot down. So I'm gonna say anything over 600 miles.
Okay. We've got you down for 600 miles. We'll see what the other guys say. And thank you. You know, I vaguely recall that. I'll have to think about that a little bit. That the Princess at one point, I think, did have a dial on it as opposed to a DTMF. Or something very close to the Princess, if it wasn't the Princess. So, good comment. EWG, please. Go ahead, David.
Well, one more quick comment on the phone thing there. How about back when they first started coming out with, you know, flea market phones and, you know, phones you might just buy anywhere. They were charging a premium for touch tone service. A lot of those phones had a switch on it to go either pulse dial or touch tone dial. As far as the X goes, well, as Gary said, you know, it's long distance. But it would also vary by what band you're on. Would you count DX the same on 2 meters as you would on 20 meters? You know, a 600-mile contact on 20, you know, that could be considered DX, but it would be really be DX on 2 meters. So it depends on what you're talking. And DX was originally a plug on a switchboard back in the days of the old switchboard operators. When they went to go down out of your area, there was actually a DX plug on their switchboard. KY6V from KB9EWG.
H.A.
Hi, Fred. Stand by. We'll get right with you. That was an interesting comment. You're talking about the old PBX boards had a DX, and what did the DX stand for? Out of country or something?
I'm talking when you dial an operator, you know, dial all for operator, and the operator come on and ask you a number, please, or whatever. And there was actually a plug on the plug board that said DX for out of the area code, or out of area, yes. And then they can actually connect you to either the appropriate operator in the next area you need to connect to, or what. But there was actually a plug on their board marked DX for out of area. KB9EWG?
That's interesting. I never heard it considered DX. You know, I recall that. That if you call the in to the phone company, you get the local operator, and then you would get switched to a long-distance operator. But I don't think it's, that I recall anyway, that it was referred to DX. Good show. K2HA, good evening, Fred. Go ahead.
Yeah, very good. This is Fred, K2HA. I've been listening on and off during the net, and the DX caught my ear. Officially, it was originally countries, DX countries. So if you want to have a DXCC, then you have to have a number of countries to get that. However, it says, I'm reading here in Wikipedia, rules for determining what a DX country can be quite complex. And they often use the term entity in ham radio. But I agree with David that depends on the frequency. Because I remember in Orlando, some of the hams in my club there were doing DX contacts over to Cocoa Beach. And they were up into, you know, gigahertz bands and direct point to point, and they were pointing antennas, and they finally made a contact. And so DX can mean many different things, so it depends on the frequency.
Well, very good, thank you, Fred. KY6V, let me read you guys what I have here that we picked up to answer the particular question. And it's very close to what everybody has said. Long distance, making contacts over long distances, and it says for HF contacts, DX is typically considered. As such, if the station contacted is outside of your country, and I underline country. Now, you know, you could debate that. If you're in the United States in Michigan and you're talking to Canada and Quebec, that's not very far. In some other cases, making a contact over what is considered extremely long distances for the condition and the band, and this is what Fred was alluding to, can be considered DX. And the examples are a QSO from one end of a state to another on 2 meter simplex can be considered DX. So there you have it in the kit and caboodle. And let me say this about that. The next question that we were going to come up with has already been touched on, and that is, what is DXCC? And we're going to keep it all in the same family. And I'm going to turn it right to EWG, who just recently, or not too long ago, got his DXCC, and let him explain what that's all about. How about that, David? Over.
Well, thank you there, Gordon. And yes, I am the proud holder of two DXCC awards, mixed and digital modes. DXCC means you have contacted more than 100, contacted and confirmed more than 100 countries that you have worked on. Well, in this case, HF there, and like I said, I did it on most mixed modes, which could be a mix of different modes there, digital, sideband, CW, and I did this on both mixed and digital modes, and so I actually have two DXCC awards to show for this, as well as worked all states and many other awards that I have earned with working mixed and digital modes on HF there, so it's 100 countries, the DX Century Club, which I am a member of. KB9EWG, back to you there, Gordon.
Isn't that great? Congratulations on that, David. Any comments on this DXCC before we go on? Okay, I see that we're 34 minutes into the second hour, so we're going to start pulling shop here very, very quickly, but I've got one more question we'll throw out, and it's all in this DX package. And the last one that I had in that area was, what is a DX expedition? A DX expedition. And the guys that get involved in that have an awful lot of fun. Any comments on that? Anybody would like to explain it? KY6V.
Hey, Jay.
Yeah, how's your antenna working? Talking about DX. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, it's working pretty good, pretty good. It's kind of directional, so I need to get another dipole up there, crossways with that, and be able to switch back and forth between the two of them to get more countries. Let's see, I'm up to 37 countries right now, and I just started working on it. So let me reset. This is Fred, KQHK. And could you state the question again?
I missed that, Fred, but I think you wanted me to restate the question, the title DX Expedition. What does that mean, and what does that entail? Over.
Well, DX Expeditions are a group of hams who decide they are going to either activate an island or a particular part of a continent that is usually not used for ham radio. And all around the world, there are many, many teams that go out, and it is very costly, because they have to raise money to do it, and usually companies, the transmitter companies, help supply transmitters and equipment from different companies, and then they have to fly in usually to the location. Let me reset. And the de-expedition runs into all kinds of political problems. Sometimes they're not allowed onto the island, and they have to wait and wait and wait. They're sitting there waiting a week or so before they can actually get to the island and get permission to either boat over or land a small plane on an island. And I'm a proud owner of a Kenwood here that was on a de-expedition. It's got a label on it. And not that I was on it, but it went on it. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA. That's a partial answer. Back to you, Gordon.
Yeah, well, it's right on. Thank you for that, Fred, KY6V. Well, when I did it, they flew me in. And it was a courtesy of the U.S. Air Force that was flying Navy personnel. I was in the Navy at the time, and at one juncture I ended up on an island called Chichijima, C-H-I-J-I-M-A. It's in the Bonin Group, about 125 miles north of Iwo Jima. Let me buy a nickel here. And I was the only ham in the whole DX area that was designated for those two islands. There were no hams on Iwo, and I was the only ham on Chichi. I was running a BC-610 into a rhombic, well, it was a V-beam type rhombic, V-beam antenna, double stacked, pointed towards the United States. And I'll tell you what, when I opened up my mouth, I had 65,233 guys trying to get into it. And I can tell you tales of the mail coming into the island down there. Let me buy another nickel. we'd get mail into this island just about weekly, and it was flown in on an amphib, and they'd throw these mail bags out, and four mail bags were for me, and one was for the rest of the group. And it was all QSL, QSL, QSL. Boy, I don't run DX anymore. Any comments from you, David, on that before we close this thing on DX expeditions? Over.
No, nothing really other than I would love to be on a de-expedition myself. Never been on one, but I've worked several de-expeditions. I even worked the boat that was on the way to Bouvet Island the first time around, and they had to turn around and come back there. So, but that should be the big one coming up is Bouvet Island. Hopefully that'll go sometime soon. KB9EWG, back to you there, Gordon.
Okay. Thanks for that, David. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all those ships out at sea, we are at 8:41 into the second hour of the program on ham jogging. I think we're about ready to close. Do we have any other comments or anybody that would like to check in at the last minute before we get the fat lady to sing, please? Over.
Kilo 3, Tango, Echo, Lima.
Oh, there's an old-timer. Hi, Arnold, K3TEL. Come aboard, and good evening.
Yeah, I'll say good evening. Yeah, I was a little late. I had somebody, JG6DEA, call me on Skype, and we talked for a while. I knew there was a net, and I tried to get off. He had breakfast because he lives over in Japan, and it was breakfast time, and I had just gotten back from the mall and had a late dinner. So I did make it, so it wasn't that I didn't. Better late than never. And I'll say good evening to everybody, and I guess I'll see Declan. I guess Declan will be net control Saturday for the yacht group, so hopefully I'll be there. And hear some of the other guys over on over from Dayton, and see who's on W5KUB. I think Jet, the actor, the young actor on Last Man Standing, is going to be one of the people that are going to probably be interviewed there. Anyway, back to Net Control K3TEL. Over.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry that you got tied up, Arnold. Our website, you know, normally posts our TIN program recordings in a podcast manner, and I will attempt to get that done in the morning. So if you'd like to review what went on tonight, you will have that opportunity by going through the website itself. Declan was on tonight, his father David. Those two, along with George, put on a special halftime program that you might find interesting also if you have a chance to listen to the podcast. Okay, anybody else here before we close, please? KY6V. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this has been SCARS. VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on our website, and that's scarsvoip.com, SCARSVOIP, one word, .com. And we've had a host of narrators here tonight. Started off with Gary, KC2GA up in Syracuse, followed by KB9EWG, that's David up in La Crosse, Wisconsin, followed by the halftime team, NO70GW8. SZL and MW6SZL out of the Wales, UK area. And yours truly, Gordon, KY6V, down here in Florida. Good evening, everybody. thanks for coming by. I had fun. I hope you did. We're going to return the server back to normal use and abuse, and we'll see you down the coax. KY6V now clear.